Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
I try to explain to some people who may not have had the same experience, you know, but a lot of people will relate to this. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood of folks who were very proud of their lawn, you know? And I was raised to believe and to know that all people deserve dignity. And that we as Americans have a beautiful character.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
If you're like me and you're proud of your lawn, you'll love our YouTube page, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We've got the show, we've got comedy skits, live news reactions. We've got all the Veep Thoughts there as well. You can go right to that section if you go to veepthoughts.com. But you know, subscribe to the YouTube page, hit the bell for notifications. You'll be notified when we post something new. We have Matt Murphy here today. Yeah, I'm excited about it. He's going to share some shocking inside stories from the life of a homicide prosecutor. I'll give you my exclusive 2024 election pulse cast update for today. But we're going to start by doing Kamala's abortion lies. By the way, before we get into that, can we just take a moment to celebrate? It's been 7 consecutive days without an assassination attempt of Donald Trump. Good job, Act Blue donors. You're doing a great job. Yeah. Nice work out there. Congratulations. Now let's get to these abortion lies from Kamala Harris, because this is the central point of her campaign. Like she did on the whole lawn segment you just heard, she has no idea what to say about anything, with one exception: abortion. This woman loves the abortions. She freaking loves them. I mean, she is passionate about abortion, and she's hitting the campaign hard. Harris hits the core campaign themes in emotional forum with Oprah Winfrey. Yes, Oprah, who I love this because they treat it like it was an interview. This is like AOC or Tim Walz doing an interview with her. She was on the stage doing an endorsement. This is not an interview. She's a campaign operative. It's not an interview. That's not what that was. But she talked a lot about abortion. And the latest pitch from the left on abortion is to make it sound like everyone's going to die if you don't have one. Now, this is their case that they tried to paint on this Georgia and North Carolina case. I want to give you a little bit of this.
This story is a story that is sadly not the only story of what has been happening since these bans have taken place. And
that's true, I guess.
You know, So just to step back in terms of how we got here.
Yeah.
The former president chose 3 members of the United States Supreme Court with the intention that they would overdo the protections of Roe v. Wade.
We need all these pauses.
And they did as he intended, and in state after state, including yours, these abortion bans have been passed that criminalize health care providers. In a couple of states, prison for life, Oprah. Prison for life in a couple of states for a doctor or a nurse who provides health care. And so it seems very apparent.
Even when the mother's life is in danger.
But see, here's the problem with that.
No.
Here's the problem with that. Mm-hmm. So is she on death's door before you actually decide to give her help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's clap. Let's clap like seals.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
We're trained seals.
Like literally a doctor or a nurse has to say, she might die any minute. Better give her now
care. They're holding up campaign signs in the audience of an interview.
For life in some cases. Mm. Think about what we're doing in terms of saying that certain people who are in these state houses, and then starting with the former president of the United States, think they're in a better position than a doctor or a nurse to determine when their patient needs medical care. This literally,
and
Amber's story highlights the fact that among everything that is wrong with these bans and what has happened in terms of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, it's a healthcare crisis.
No, it's not.
It's a healthcare crisis that affects the patient and the profession.
I got 45 minutes on the story and about 10 minutes to do it, so let me do my best to hold back. Georgia abortion death, afraid to seek care. Amid Georgia's abortion ban, she stayed at home and died. This is a ProPublica story, which is basically what led to all of this nonsense coming from the left. Now, of course, all of this is false. This is not true at all. It has nothing to do with the law whatsoever. The case is honestly pretty obvious when you look at it that it has nothing to do with this law. Kamala Harris is being deceptive about Georgia abortion deaths. This comes from National Review. To give you their little rundown on the story, it was Amber Nicole Thurman and Candy Miller. There's two cases that they're promoting here. And by the way, trying to build their political campaigns over dead people. Just to be clear, that's what they're doing here. That's their entire role. Thurman obtained abortion pills in North Carolina, then returned home to Georgia to take them. The pills killed her unborn twins, but did not expel her remains. She sought hospital treatment, but doctors did not remove the remains, and Thurman died as a result. Miller, in a similar situation, declined to seek any treatment and died at home. ProPublica implied that both women's deaths were the fault of Georgia law. In the former case, doctors did not believe they could operate on Thurman. In the latter, Miller did not believe doctors could operate on her. Now, number one here, so much I want to say. At the very least, if anything is at fault here, it is the left-wing media for scaring these women into thinking that these laws prevented them from getting this care, which they absolutely can get within the bounds of the law. It is not illegal, and you should know this. God forbid you're in one of these situations. I encourage you so strongly not to to abort your child. That child deserves life, and please allow it to be born. Someone else will take care of it if you don't want it, I promise. That being said, if you go through the situation, and God forbid you've gone through an abortion, and God forbid one of these situations that we are here all the time, that these are the safest procedures in the world. You take these abortion pills like Tylenol. It's like nothing. It's just as safe as Tylenol. We hear this all the time. Well, these women keep dropping dead from what happens afterward. Okay? So if you are in one of these situations, and God forbid this happens and the remains of the child who is now dead do not come out of you, you absolutely can go to the hospital and get the care you need. That is absolutely 100% true with every single one of these laws across America. Full stop. They are lying to you when they say that they're not. And think about what they're doing here. They are encouraging more of these situations to happen because they want to get votes from dumb people who don't look at the laws. That is what they're trying to do. They want to scare women into staying home and not getting the medical care that they actually need. Why? Because they want to win elections and gain power. That's what they're doing here. It is disgusting. And they have blood on their hands for doing it. Now, of course, even the ProPublica story admits this isn't possible within these laws. Quote, it prohibits doctors from using any instrument to, quote, with the purpose of terminating a pregnancy. Now, what happens if you've already aborted a kid? Are you terminating a pregnancy after the baby's already dead? No, it's impossible to terminate the baby after the baby's already been terminated. You can't double terminate them. So none of these laws would cover the situation we're talking about here. The law is very clear about it. Here is the law itself. When they're talking, what they're preventing here is to cause the death of an unborn child. If you've already aborted the kid, you can't cause the death of an unborn child. Detectable human heartbeat. If it's already dead, it doesn't have a detectable human heartbeat. Detectable human heartbeat, again, highlighted in that next phrase. A lot of this comes from the hard work of John McCormick, who's gone through a lot of that. He's over at the Dispatch. And I want to highlight a couple of the segments that he pulls out because it is important for you to understand what this law does and what it does not do. It does. It's important. Unlike what the left is doing, which wants you to have the incorrect perception for political gain. And also, oh, sure, on the side, it kills a couple people. In reality, this is what the truth is. To be clear, it would be egregious malpractice for a hospital to delay treatment in a life-threatening circumstance, even if there were a fetal heartbeat. Contrary to ProPublica's dangerously false claim, no abortion law in the country requires waiting until a woman is on the brink of death to provide treatment in any life-threatening case. When life-threatening condition arises, abortion laws allow immediate treatment. The most restrictive state laws, experts predicted, would pit doctors' fears of prosecution against their patients' health needs, requiring providers to make sure their patient was inarguably at the brink of death. Now, that is what ProPublica says. Of course, this is not true. It is not in the law. It is not the case. In Nevada, by the way, and this is the thing, they try to make it seem like, well, these abortion bans are causing these. Well, they're happening all over the place. What did Kamala start with that clip? I don't remember what she said. She said something like, you know, this is the case we're seeing. This is not the only case where this is happening. I would like to give her exact quote, but I don't know where the card is. Bottom line is that's what she said. This is not the only case we're seeing this. Well, it's true, because in Nevada, where you can get an abortion like on the strip in Vegas, anytime you want, night or day. In Nevada, a state where abortion was and is legal, Elana Dixon died in September 22nd with the same scenario, taking abortion pills, developing sepsis, and not getting proper care. Her family is suing the hospital. Why did that happen in that case? Why did it happen in Nevada where it's completely legal? Why? Well, sometimes hospitals do a bad job. One of these cases seems like the hospital just did a bad job, not because necessarily of fear. By the way, even ProPublica has no one on record, even saying that's the reason they actually waited the 20 hours, but they waited 20 hours, which was medical malpractice, has nothing to do with the law at all. But it also happened in Nevada. Why did it happen in Nevada? They don't have this law. Why did it happen there? All of these things keep building back to the same story. These are just lies, and they're lies that were, if you have to put yourself, take yourself out of the conservative movement for a second, take yourself out of the pro-life movement, take yourself out of the Trump voter movement for a second, put yourself as a person who's probably a young woman who maybe had a relationship that, you know, was not all that fruitful. She doesn't want to get knocked up. She's thinking about an abortion. She's told over and over and over again that abortion is so incredibly safe. It's safer than actually having the baby. It's safer than taking Tylenol. Okay? They are told that over and over and over again. So they think, well, I'll just go do this and it'll be gone. Then they're dealt with all the physical and emotional scarring that goes on because of this procedure. And then they come back and the thing doesn't work, which seems, by the way, to be happening a little more often than they're mentioning. So it doesn't work. It does not get rid of the remains of the fetus. And then what? Now you're stuck at, I need medical help. I'm home in a state that has an abortion ban that's targeting women just like me, especially women of color who are affected by this. They're going to arrest me. They're going to throw me in prison. I'm going to take my chances on this, especially when you're told you're not allowed to get the medical treatment that you actually need. Who's causing these? It's not the right causing these deaths at all. And then you get stories written up about it, where they completely lie. What happens when, you know, look, think back to the Ohio pets being eaten story. There's some similarities here. You know, you can say, well, there actually are laws, right, where abortion is being banned. So there's that grain of truth kind of tied to this, even though all these stories are false about the abortion situation. Well, the same thing goes on with the dogs and cats being eaten. We don't have a lot of evidence in that particular town that that has happened. There are some reports of geese being eaten in that town or taken out of the ponds by some migrants. We don't know if they're, all these reports are true, but it, of course, does highlight there's a grain of truth, even if these are totally false, a grain of truth of what's happening with illegal immigration in this country, in particular in Springfield. Well, we know that is going on. And what happens every time you see a story about Springfield? Donald Trump, who falsely claimed that this was going on. Donald Trump, with no evidence, claimed this, blah, 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 blah. Now I want to show you what happens on the other side of this when there's an abortion story that's similar. And the New York Times reports on that. Kamala Harris delivered an impassioned speech about abortion rights in Georgia. She will hold a rally later on in Wisconsin. So, no, it's impassioned. There's no falsely claimed. It's just, it's impassioned. She's passionate about it. She's, I mean, I think J.D. Vance was passionate about dogs and cats being eaten. No, that's not the way it's handled. Then the next one. On Monday, ProPublica reported that the deaths of two women in the state were a result of delayed treatment after receiving medication abortions, episodes that occurred in the months after the Georgia passed a 2022 law banning abortion at 6 weeks. Now, it doesn't say it causes them, of course, because it's not true that it causes them. It just say it happens after them. Oh, that's nice. It happened after them. Well, thank you for the timeline of that particular thing. But you know, it's not on Monday ProPublica falsely reported like they would if it was a conservative cause. None of that. And then the only thing when they say, when none of these stories are true, the only thing that gets pushed there about that whole side of the story is Republicans have pushed back on arguments that Georgia's abortion law was the cause of the women's death. It's not that, you know, that's the only hedge, is Republicans have pushed back. Not that it's not true, not that it's there's no truth to this at all. It's just that Republicans have decided to push back on it. Oh, well, that makes a lot of difference, right, to a liberal reader. The only mention of the actual policy that Kamala has here, and the only policy there, is that Republicans have mocked it, right? It doesn't talk about what the actual law says. It's just that Republicans have mocked it, which makes the Republicans look like the bad people. They could easily just quote the law, which would dismantle the entire narrative, but they don't bother to do that. There's no fact check on her claim of women only receiving health care right before they die. It's just thrown out there as fact, even though we just showed it's not true. There's no mention of the fact that even if these stories were true, even if the law were responsible for the deaths, they would be so impossibly rare. They don't mention that at all. Now, when we bring up third-term abortions, every single time those are discussed, the incredibly rare, these abortions are incredibly rare. Thousands of them happen every year, but we're told they're incredibly rare. Now, we have three stories. One of them just is in a pro-abortion state, so we don't count that one. Two stories of this happening since 6/24/22, the date that Roe versus Wade was overturned. We have two stories like this, and we're not told that they're rare at all. Over and over and over. I don't know how Democrats have ever freaking lost an election in this environment. How have they ever lost when they have all these arguments on their side, all these media people on their side arguing their case 24/7? It's an embarrassment, and it's wrong. And children are dying because of it, and adults are dying because of it. They all have blood on their hands. At some point, good God, please help the American people wake up and see this. According to a new report, President Biden, who apparently is still president of the United States right now, he signed off on a highly classified plan that shifts America's nuclear strategy toward China, maybe with North Korea mixed in. Really, really scary stuff, especially when you think that that guy has his finger on the button. That's terrifying to me. I think you should be prepared for whatever is around the corner. There is something that you can do that ensures you and your loved ones have the medication that you need. It's a basic thing in life these days. Thousands of people have already discovered it. It's called the Jace case, and it allows you to stock up on medication now so that you are prepared. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics that your family needs. People that, you know, you might think, oh, I can just go to the pharmacy and get that. Not always the case, as you may have noticed over the past couple of years. Sometimes medication that you need is just not around, especially when there's an outbreak of some sort. So fill out a simple form online and you will have all the stuff in case you need it. Go to Jace.com. Enter the code STU at checkout. Protect your family. Get a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at Jace.com. Jace.com. The promo code is STU.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Geschenke, mit denen niemand rechnet. Bis zum 26.12. in deiner Rewe-App. Einfach täglich öffnen und Coupons und Gewinnchancen sichern.
Rewe. Dein Markt.
I'm happy to welcome Matt Murphy to the program. He's a former homicide prosecutor and author of the fascinating new book, The Book of Murder, A Prosecutor's Journey Through Love and Death, which is available now wherever you get your books. Be sure to grab a copy. Matt, thanks so much for coming on the program, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, your book is really fascinating. And I think I want to get to some of the specific cases here in a second. But it seems like it not only is a really important job to have people going out there and making sure, you know, these criminals go to prison and pay the price for their crimes, but also it's got to be just really arduous on you personally going through all of this. What is it like going through this career? And tell me about the book.
Well, the career, it's one of those things. It's kind of a calling in a weird way. I knew my junior law clerk summer at the end of my first day that it's what I wanted to do. And the longer you stay, my plan was to be a DA for 3 years. And 26 years later, I figured I might want to actually, finally make that move. What happens is as a prosecutor is, number one, the work is fascinating. You get into, the longer you stay, the more interesting the cases get. And then you work up to, in my case, sexual assault and then homicide, where you're dealing with real victims of the worst imaginable crimes. And you have this kind of unique opportunity to try to bring justice to the victims' families. As corny as that might sound, that kind of becomes your life in a way. And Orange County has what's known as a vertical system. So you get assigned cities when you come into homicide. Most DA's offices, one, you know, the police investigate and one DA reviews it and another will do the preliminary hearing, and it kind of goes up the line and, you know, five or six people have had their hands on it by the time it goes to trial. It's different in Orange County. You're the only deputy DA that has the case from the very beginning. We go to the crime scene ourselves. We do the preliminary hearing ourselves. We determine what charges are to be filed, who gets charged with what, and then you take it all the way through jury trial. So when you meet the families, especially for me, the moms, they kind of get in your heart a little bit, and you want to help them to the greatest degree you can. And it kind of turns into a unhealthy and yet very healthy addiction in a way.
Mm, yeah, I mean, it really is fascinating. And the different twists and turns each one of these cases takes. I mean, they're all so different. You go through a great variety of them. I want to start talking about your chapter 6. It's a sadism, serial killers, and bachelor number one. This is the dating game killer. It's the subject of a new movie on Netflix that's coming out with Anna Kendrick pretty soon. Can you kind of take us through this? Because the guy, the dating game killer himself, a very difficult man to be able to put in the position of a jury seeing him as guilty. He was sort of persuasive and seeming like a likable guy.
That's one of the fascinating things about serial killers. You know, now most murders are situational. You know, it's neighbors arguing over, a fence line or loud music or domestic violence is kind of a very common type of murder that you see, or robbery's gone wrong. Serial killers are a different ballgame. And I talk about this a little bit in the book. When I got moved into homicide, I thought I knew about serial killers because I'd seen Silence of the Lambs, you know, what's not to know. And, you get in there and you think that a serial killer is like some societal outcast who's been horrifically abused and he lives in a creepy house and, you know, he's got a well in the middle of it, like we saw in that movie. And the truth is actually far, far scarier. The typical serial killer that I encountered, and I did 13 of them when I was a DA, they tend to be hyper-intelligent. They tend to be successful. They have successful relationships. They do good in school. They're not abused. In fact, if there's one common thread that you see over and over again when you're actually dealing with these cases, is a lot of them are spoiled as kids. And it is really, really interesting. So Rodney Alcala was kind of an archetype of that. Rodney Alcala was also known as the dating game killer. He kidnapped and attempted to murder an 8-year-old girl in Hollywood in 1968. Right. So it's this dramatic scene. And the police officer Camacho, who's a true hero, there's a good Samaritan who sees this little girl get in the guy's car and he follows him. And back, this is in the days long before cell phones. So he finds a payphone, calls it in. And this police officer was on his first day back at work. He got shot during the Watts riots and he was shot previously in Vietnam. So he's like 23 years old. The guy's been shot twice in uniform. And he makes a call that only really a hero police officer makes. He kicks the door down and he sees naked bad guy Rodney Alcala running out the back of the house. And in the kitchen, he sees dying little girl. So it's like catch the bad guy, save the little girl. And he did the right thing. He saved the girl. She's in a coma for 32 days, brutally raped, almost died. Absolutely unbelievable. He gets caught. Extradited. He gets caught several years later working in an all-girls summer camp in upstate Vermont. And they wind up extraditing him. He gets sentenced on that, gets a life sentence, and then is paroled after 34 months, where he goes on a spree that, depending on the estimates and which detective worked the case, when you do the math on it, probably killed about 100 people. After his release from California State Prison, there's at least five that we know of in New York. I think there's a sixth. There's one in Texas. He was charged with one in Wyoming. He was cleared to one in Marin County. We had five that we prosecuted. So basically, he gets convicted of kidnapping and murdering a 12-year-old girl out of Huntington Beach in 1979. And in the middle of this streak, Rodney Alcala went on the dating game and he won it. And you can see it on YouTube. It's absolutely fascinating because you see some of the charm and some of the intelligence. He had a Mensa level IQ. He was a certified genius. He was a varsity letterman on his high school cross country team, worked on the yearbook committee, had girlfriends, had a mother who loved him, all of that. It's the real serial killers don't fit any of those myths or misconceptions, at least that I had when I went into homicide. So it's fascinating.
It really is fascinating. I mean, all these stories are just riveting like this. You talk a lot about how technology has helped as you go through this and the DNA, and you go through all this detail. It's really, really incredible. Let me give you another one, though, I want to ask you about, which is your Vegas baby. This is a case in Vegas about a gambler who's desperate and winds up killing a couple people. And what's fascinating about that is, like, you see this from the perspective of the defense, where they want to create in a jury. No one wants to believe they'd ever murder someone, but they want to create this idea that, like, oh gosh, it's sort of understandable, right? Like, there's something there. A crime of passion is another example I use in the book, where, like, you put the jury in the position, well, maybe I could see myself doing, maybe he's not that bad of a guy. How do you get around that? Because when you're playing with emotions and something that's inherently going to be really emotional, it's got to be really sticky.
Well, so in that particular case, we never found the body. That's the Ed Shen case. And no body homicides are another really interesting thing when you're a prosecutor. And you think, how could you ever prove a case without a body? But juries, really, at the end of the day, despite all the advances in technology, and it's wonderful, and forensics, and we're all very lucky that we've made those scientific advances. At the end of the day, most murders boil down to good old fashioned common sense, life experience, and following the law. And if they do that, juries are going to reach the right result about 99 times out of 100, in my experience. So this was a guy that it's these two young, handsome guys in Southern California, and they start a business together in the advertising lead world, which is something that I didn't even know existed before I had this case. And it's like those ads that we see late night, you know, on TV, like mesothelioma or you can solve your hair loss or credit restructuring, whatever it may be. Those aren't actually the companies that are offering the services. They contract with people that actually provide whatever the services may be, and they sell those leads, or the people that click on the ad, or call in that, you know, 1-800-NOW operator standing by. And anyway, those guys were 34 years old, Chris Smith and Ed Shen, and they made about $12 million their first year. So they're absolutely killing it. And turns out one of them had a gambling problem. And I almost don't want to give too much away, but it's a fascinating story. And because we never found the body, when you don't have a body as a prosecutor, normally when you have a murder case, you got a dead body, there's an element, a human being was killed. That's one of the primary elements. I think it's the first element under California law in the murder instruction given to juries. Well, so most of the time you get a dead body and that's just it. You know, it's kind of easy to get through that one. You get a body with a bullet wound or something. But when there's no body, you have to prove that they're dead. And when you're talking about the emotions, especially against somebody who's a con man like Ed Shen, you have to prove that your victim is actually dead. And that means you get to put on their best friend to say he would never have missed the big game, or his mom to say he never would have missed Christmas, or his girlfriend to say he loved his dog more than life itself and never would have left his dog. You know, so the jury gets to see the real human element of your victim. And my old boss, Lou Rosenblum, who was my mentor, and the man was a genius in trial. When I had my first no body case, I went into him and I'm like, hey, any tips on this? And he, you know, the smile of wisdom, and he looked at me and I'll never forget it. He said, the jury can always see the soul of your victim reflected in the eyes of those who love them. So just super profound. And that's basically how those cases work. So you counter, you know, the con man veneer of somebody like Ed Shin with the real world horror of what they did. And you do that, you know, by calling the people that love them to say that he never would have missed, you know, he never would have gone away without talking to us, you know, without saying goodbye. So it gets more and more interesting. The longer you stay in a unit like that, the better you get at doing those trials and the more fascinating it becomes. And before long, you almost feel like you're living in a movie. You know, you're getting the call outs in the middle of the night. You're working these cases up with detectives. And I've always been kind of a crew time junkie myself. So it's fascinating. And, you know, you sacrifice a lot as a prosecutor, but the truth is, and this might be a little twisted, I still miss it every day.
Matt, let me give you with one more here, because I could sit here and pepper you with questions about each of these individual cases. Sure. All day long. You know, I go to Crime Con. I like it. I like this stuff too. But give me your kind of state of the world when it comes to justice right now, especially in a state like California. I don't know. From my vantage point, I'm super concerned. It seems like lots of crimes go unpunished almost by design at this point. What is your view of California and states like it, and what is the state of justice these days?
Well, thanks for asking me that question. I live in Los Angeles County, and you're exactly right. This is unsustainable, what's happening in LA County right now. You've got Rodney Alcala is actually a perfect example of this. This guy is a monster, kidnaps, rapes, and almost murders a 8-year-old little girl, right? He's paroled in 34 months. And after he was released from prison, he killed 100 people. Okay, so that's 100 families that have to go through the grief of the worst thing you can imagine. And they are doing this. We have a DA in Los Angeles County named George Gascon. There's an election coming up. He's being challenged by a man named Nathan Hochman, who hopefully wins, because my city that I grew up in is screwed if he doesn't. George Gascon, the first thing he did is he came in and he forbade his prosecutors, as a matter of sweeping edict day one, from attending what are called BPT lifer hearings. So normally when a life prisoner, that means they're a child molester, they're a rapist, or they're a murderer. Those are essentially the life offenses in the state of California. When a life prisoner comes up for parole for any other county, a prosecutor's there. This was a huge part of my job for 17 years. The prosecutor goes to the prison with the file, and you sit there, and when they come in and the guy says, it was an accident, or I didn't mean to do it, or whatever it may be, you've got the file there and you've got a prosecutor, a professional to say, that's not true. Here's what actually happened in the case, and to oppose the release of these people that still often pose a huge risk. And when it comes to the rapists and the child molesters, they always pose an unacceptable risk, in my view, because there's no fixing those guys. Mm. And a lot of murderers are exactly the same. And his first day in office, he forbid his prosecutors from going and opposing the release of life prisoners. It is absolute madness. And it's like people are asleep. You know, there were two recall campaigns against him because a lot of people figured out how horrific that was. And when these guys get paroled, also, they don't get paroled. I live in Manhattan Beach. They don't get paroled in Manhattan Beach. They get paroled and go and victimize people in the same neighborhoods that people like George Gascon profess to want to protect. It is hypocrisy of the highest order. I didn't think I was going to rant here, but I'm not a political guy at all. I'm very neutral. I grew up in California. I went to UCSB. I don't belong to any political party. And I'm telling you, it is a public safety issue, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, especially if you live in the Los Angeles area. We have a friggin' absolute clown as our district attorney right now. And it will be, as far as I'm concerned, in my opinion, he already has blood on his hands. He's horrific when it comes to victims. I've represented the families of two murdered police officers fighting against his policies that would have released the killers of their police officer husbands and sons if they'd been successful. Fortunately, we prevailed on those two cases, but there's so many others. So, no, we are in dire straits. People need to wake up. And unfortunately, you know, Polly Klaus, you know, when you talk about the word progressive, when it comes to progressive DAs, there's nothing progressive at all about these policies. They are regressive because they take us back to the revolving door policies of the early 1970s. And trust me here, having spent years with the families of Rodney Alcala's victims in that case, that is horrific for everybody. Nothing to do with politics, everything about public safety. And when you have ideological, lunatic, progressive district attorneys who are backed by a guy named George Soros, people should do their research. They're putting their own loved ones at risk. And people need to, hopefully they will educate themselves about it. So we don't have another Polly Klaus here in the state of California. Sorry for the rant. You hit a nerve this morning for me on this. People need to wake up, and my fellow Angelenos need to wake up.
Well, Matt, you've got another book on your hands, because I would definitely read that one, too, because it's so, so important. I really appreciate you drawing attention to it. Matt Murphy, he's the former homicide prosecutor, lawyer, and author of the brand new book, The Book of Murder. Now, it's a prosecutor's journey through love and death. It's fascinating. These stories are fascinating. If you're into the stuff at all, you have to read this book. It's available now. Be sure to grab a copy wherever you get your books. Matt, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, there's another part of the justice system that is in threat right now, and that's the Supreme Court. The left is trying to pack the Supreme Court, and we've been just talking about George Soros. He is front and center trying to push court packing through, and First Liberty Institute is on the other side of this. They are calling this assault on the court out and calling it what it is. It's a Supreme Court coup. Right now, if you can join First Liberty, we can get all of our actions together, and we can do something about this radical left plan to take control of the Supreme Court. The future of the court and of preserving an independent judiciary is in our hands, and we can do something about it. First Liberty Institute has been doing something about a lot of stuff, like religious freedom. The reason why it seems like it keeps holding up, First Liberty is in the middle of all of those cases you hear about each and every time. If a million patriots like you and me stand up for the Supreme Court, we can do something about this. And that's what they're trying to do right now. This is what the founding fathers intended, and it's the right thing to do. By saying no to the left's Supreme Court coup, we can secure the blessings of liberty and protect the future of our constitutional rights and republic for our children and our grandchildren. Go to supremecoup.com/stew. Supremecoup, C-O-U-P, supremecoup.com/stew. Learn how you can help stop the radical left's takeover of the Supreme Court through First Liberty Institute. It is supremecoup.com/stew.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Look, you know, if you want to look at what's going on in the election, you probably don't have time to click through dozens and dozens of election sites and see what everyone's thinking and try to synthesize it down to one number. That's why we've done this for you. It's called the PulseCast. And the PulseCast is basically an effort not for me to predict the election. We'll do that ourselves in a separate segment on the show. But this is basically to give you an idea as to what experts are saying, whether you believe them or not. You might think they suck and you don't want to look at this. I understand, but this is what they are doing. The PulseCast gives you an example, an idea of what is Trump's chances to win the election, at least as far as the experts are saying. And we have an update for today. Trump has a 43.02% chance of winning the election. As you kind of see over the past couple of weeks, kind of gone the wrong direction for Trump. Harris is up at 56.98% chance to win the election. Now, to put that in perspective, basically, anything above 40%, I'd put in the toss-up category. At least I wouldn't know who was going to win going into election night, or at least be really sure about it. But that's where we are right now. I do expect this to start coming back to earth after the debate bump she has received over the past couple of weeks. And I can give you some evidence on this, not included in this particular example of the PulseCast. It will be started to filter in on tomorrow's update. is new polling from New York Times Siena, and it's pretty darn positive for Donald Trump. In Arizona, you have Donald Trump at 50 and Harris at 45, a 5-point lead. In Georgia, 49 to 45, Trump, a 4-point lead. And in North Carolina, a 2-point lead, 49 to 47. All three of those states, I would argue, are, with the possible exception of Arizona, maybe he could find another path if he didn't have Arizona. But generally speaking, you absolutely need all three of those states. If he's losing North Carolina, he's probably lost the election. So that is a, you know, really, really key states. Now, it's interesting. Another thing I noticed in this polling was how they asked specific questions. And this is something the Trump campaign and reality should be able to push back on, whether the media will do it or not. I don't know. And this is what they ask. They say, do you think Donald Trump's policies have helped people like you, hurt people like you, or haven't made much of a difference either way? It's a typical election poll in which you see, of course, Democrats say they haven't helped, Republicans say they have. In this case, independents favor Trump's policies, 43 to 30. All respondents, 45% say Trump's policies have helped, and 34% say they have hurt. And I emphasize the word have there. Have Trump's policies have hurt or have helped? They are existing policies that have done something to you already. Now, listen to the way they phrase the question when it comes to Kamala Harris. Do you think Kamala Harris's policies would help people like you, hurt people like you, or wouldn't make a difference either way? A lot of conservatives are showing this and saying, well, actually, they say hurt, 42 to 37. And independents say they would hurt them, 42 to 30. But what I think a lot of people are missing on this is that they're acting like they're not already in place. They have hurt you. They have hurt you. They will hurt you more in the future, but they have hurt you. It's really important to get that message across. And again, we keep acting like it's a conspiracy theory that this woman is already in office. She's already there. If this is a change candidate, then give me information about what you would change. When did Joe Biden stop you from trying to implement a policy? Did that occur once? Tell us about it. Maybe we'll see that in the future. I doubt it. A couple of other quick developments. Harris is embracing crypto now in an overture to young men. I'm going to be skeptical of that one. We'll see. I think it would be a really good thing for the country if both sides of the party, both sides of the aisle were pro-crypto and saw this as an advancement. It wasn't like a partisan thing. Don't think I actually believe Kamala on this, but we will see. I hope, if God forbid she gets in, maybe she'd be good on that policy. I sincerely doubt it. Another one I kind of doubt. Trump rules out in 2028 if he loses election. I believe that when I see it. I mean, I don't think he'll ever see himself losing this election, even if that's what the polls say anyway. And frankly, I think he likes this stuff too much. So I will believe that in like 2029. That's about the last time I'll believe that. Finally, another one I'm not sure I believe, Harris and Trump in talks with 60 Minutes. Will Harris do a sit down with 60 Minutes? Look, it'll be a favorable interview, but she'll get some tough questions and she'll actually have to answer them, maybe. So, anytime you can get her in front of an audience, I'm fine with it. Do more, have her out there more words out of Kamala's mouth. That's what I want. Again, I've been on record for a long time. Trump should do more debates. I hope he does. We will see where that goes in the future, but I'm a little skeptical of all of those stories. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. All you have to do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and you watch the winnings roll in. I've done really well on Prize Picks. I love it. There's a Monday night game tonight. I'm going to be on it tonight. I did lose this past weekend, but that's okay. It's okay. And I will say I've normally won with Prize Picks. Why? Well, part of it is they keep giving us these free squares. So like Caleb Williams is more or less, you have to pick 0.5 yards. I'm pretty sure more is the right way to go on that. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. And Prize Picks puts their members first. So the withdrawals are quick and easy. When I win, I can get my money in like 15 minutes. It's really, really easy. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code STEWSPORTS. Get $50 instantly when you play only $5. That code is STEWSPORTS on the Prize Picks app. Get $50 instantly when you play only $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. So check it out now. Prize Picks, run your game. By the way, WNBA breaking news, Asia Wilson, MVP of the league, but Caitlin Clark, unanimous choice for Rookie of the Year. I think Clark finished fourth or something maybe in the MVP race, maybe fourth or fifth. As a rookie, not too bad. Also, she got basically stabbed in the eye by one of the players in an act that looked gosh darn intentional. So that's one way to beat her. Just puncture her eyeballs a few times, and she's very beatable. Go to YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Join us there. We're going to have some live broadcasts going on this week. Don't miss them. Use the bell for notifications and follow the page, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica.